Crossroads. So glad you guys are with us this weekend. Hey, we are kicking off our brand new series called Spark, and this is going to be incredible. Every weekend, we're going to hear new ideas that have the potential to ignite our life. And this weekend, we're going to hear from two different people. They're timed, they're awesome, they're totally different. You're going to love it. We're actually going to kick things off here in a couple of minutes with worship. For us, we call these our sort of prayer set to music. The cool thing is, no matter what you believe, or where you are in your spiritual journey with God, you can sort of try some of this on and begin singing with us. In fact, that's what we'd love for you to do. It's, just use some of these words in a conversation you can have with God. And so turn the volume up, put your headphones in, whatever you got to do to get in the zone, get everybody in the room with you. We're going to get started in just a couple of seconds. Glad you're here.
Crossroads, and thanks for joining us on Crossroads Anywhere as well. My name's Aaron. I'm the worship leader down in Florence, but man, I'm excited to be up here with you guys today. We're going to have some fun. We're starting a brand new series today called Spark, where we will be sharing ideas with each other to help ignite our lives. So why don't we stand up? We're just going to spend some time worshiping and inviting God into this space.
Thank you. before the throne. For the throne of God above, I have a strong and perfect plea. The great high priest whose name is love, whoever lives and pleads for me.
So about a year ago, I heard this idea about worship, and it has really stuck with me, and I think it stuck with me because it's so simple. And it basically just says, we worship the thing that is most important to us. Or we worship the thing that takes up the most space in our brain. So for me, sometimes, yeah, that totally means that I worship God and I put him in that place that he so rightfully deserves. But I also put my wife there. I put my daughter there. I put my family there. I put my friends there. I put my desire for people to approve of me there. I put my money or my lack of money, or my health or my lack of health there. But I truly believe that God has designed me, and he's designed every single one of us to put him first in our lives above everything else. And when we do that, we get this amazing access to the endless depth and riches that he has. And he wants to bless us with those things because he's a good father. And when I look back on my 29 years, I can just see over and over again how God has provided for me. He's taken care of me. He's restored me. He's rescued me. He just continually reveals himself to me. And that just leads me to these two questions. It says, why would I give anybody else his worship? Why would I give anything else his praise? So we're going to share a new song with you guys right now. We're going to teach it to you. We're just going to sing this chorus a couple times, and then we'll go from there. Sound good?
All right.
Well, one, two, three, four.
I give
shout it out.
You are. You are my last, you are my future in my heart. And you are my first, you are my last, you are my future in my past.
Let's tell him he's a good father.
You're a good, good father. It's who you are. It's who you are. It's who you are. And I'm loved by you. It's who I am. It's who I am. It's who I am. You're a good, good father. It's who you are. It's who you are. It's who you are. And I'm loved by you. It's who I am. It's who I am. It's who I am.
Tell him he's perfect.
You are perfect in all of your ways. You are perfect in all of your ways. You are perfect in all of your ways. To us.
Yes, you are. Everybody.
You're a good, good father. It's who you are. It's who you are. It's who you are. And I'm loved by you. It's who I am. It's who I am. It's who I am.
God, you know every single thing about us. God, you know all of our flaws. You know all of our strengths. God, and despite all of those things, whatever those things that we're ashamed of, God, you choose to love us anyway. God, you are so good to us. God, you are such a good father. You're the perfect representation of what a father should be. And God, I just ask that today as we're here and we listen, God, that we would just catch a glimpse of your goodness. God, that you would see our steps into this place as a prayer. A prayer that just says, God, I desperately need you. I need to hear from you. I want you. And God, may you answer that prayer for us. We just ask all these things in Jesus' name. Amen. Awesome. Thank you guys so much for singing along. That was great. Why don't you introduce yourself to somebody and make a friend and ask them what their favorite pizza topping is. Mine is sausage, pepperoni, and jalapeno.
Hey guys, welcome to Crossroads. My name's Matt. I lead Crossroads Anywhere. Special welcome to dads. I'm a dad. Happy Father's Day, guys. I have two little boys at home. This is only my really second ever Father's Day. So I'm still in the world of getting the finger painted things or the mugs with pictures on them. I hope this year something happens for you this weekend that makes you feel super honored. I know the topics and the teaching that we're about to enter into is really going to be directed at you guys, dads, and really gonna be beneficial for everybody, but it's gonna be a special weekend. I wanted to take a little bit of time and just give everybody a sort of a behind the scenes view of this thing that we've been calling Crossroads Anywhere. It's this way that people can be a part of Crossroads, can journey towards God together, regardless of where they live. And I want you to know how I think about this. So I break up sort of the critical components of a spiritual journey into three parts. We call them up, in, and out. And so the behind the scenes on this is, no matter where you are, no matter what you believe, if you're interested in going on a journey that sort of brings you closer to God, you're going to need all three of these components. And so up is sort of our connection to God. It's where we can worship. We just did that through song. It's where we might pray. It's where the teaching that we're going to receive. And so you can think about your sort of attending on the weekend as a component of your up. It's connecting you to God in a unique way, and in community, you know, and it's been really exciting. We have thousands of people every weekend who connect with God and through Crossroads join and sort of watch online every weekend. And you're one of those folks, and we're really excited about that. We think it's a really important part of the spiritual journey, but it's not the only one. And so we always talk about Crossroads as being a team you can belong to, not really like a TV show that you can just watch. You know, I grew up playing soccer. That was sort of my team sport. That was my world growing up. I absolutely loved it. I don't know if you're a soccer fan. Some people think it's boring. I think it's riveting. And yet, whenever I go to watch a soccer game, I'm always like itching on the sidelines. I don't know if you've ever tried to watch a soccer game on TV. I don't know, depending on where you land on this, sometimes it's the most boring thing in the world to watch on TV. And for me, church is pretty similar. Like, this thing of a spiritual journey isn't something that we can just be an observer of. We can't sort of stand on the sidelines. The cool thing about Crossroads is no matter where you are, you can absolutely come in. This is a safe place to sort of ask questions, to kind of look around for a while, to explore what it means to follow God, who God is. This idea of a God I can have a relationship with. There's all these people with lives that look different from mine. And so you can just, it's good to poke around, but at some point, if you're really gonna go on the spiritual journey with God, you have to get in the game, right? And so we can't just sort of watch from the distance. We've gotta get in the game. And the only way to do that is through team. And so I'm giving you kind of a sneak peek. This fall, you're gonna hear about a lot of opportunities for you to have interactions with a group. We want everyone to be in a group, to know people and sort of be known at Crossroads, to take this big movement and make it really small. That's the in component. So up, in, and out. The end component is this ability for us to sort of deeply belong, have friends who know us, who we do life together, and we get to grow together. And so that's really what I want for you. So if you are attending on the weekend, but you're kind of doing it on your own, I want to give you some opportunities to get on the team. And so one opportunity that people have taken advantage of is they've become hosts, community hosts. So this is a really cool thing. You know, church was never meant to be relegated to really big buildings or special sort of structures in certain cities. Church is where believers and people who are journeying towards God gather together. They have a sense of mission in their life, and that can actually happen in your home. We have over 120 people who have signed up to be community hosts. That just means they open up their living room every weekend for people to come and attend Crossroads in a community all over the country and really the world, and that can be you. I would love for you to take that sort of plunge, and you don't have to know what you're doing. You don't have to have gone to seminary. I haven't gone to seminary. You know, all you have to do is have a willing heart and really just a TV or a laptop that people can gather around where you guys can all connect with God together on this journey. And so a way to do that, if you wanna become a host, on live.crossroads.net, where you're probably tuning in and sort of attending right now, there's a little button you can click that says sign up to be a Crossroads host. We'll get you all the information you need. We'll equip you to do this. It's an absolute blast, and you get to start seeing life-changing community happen in your own living room, which is incredible. If you're not really ready to take the plunge to be a host, I'd still want to connect you with other people. So I'm going to ask you to send me a text message. So every weekend, we sort of talked about the ability to text Crossroads. We love to have an opportunity to help you with any questions you have. And today, I'm going to give you this number. So 513-402-0289 is a number you can text, and you can just tell us that you want to get connected to other people. We'll try to find you people who are in your neighborhood, in your city. We'll try to match you guys up. It could be a Google Hangout, a virtual. At the end of the day, I just want you to know other people who are journeying towards God along with you. And so just don't hesitate. I would just say this is a risk worth taking, and it's a really key component of the spiritual journey. The third part of this journey is out. So we've got up, in, and out. And out is a sense of mission. So a really exciting thing about being on the team is we feel like we're called to something greater than ourselves. And we do that a lot around here. And so we've had massive citywide service projects. We've given away millions of dollars. We've sent people to different countries to serve people who have less than us. There's just incredible things happening at Crossroads. And one of the ways that we sort of get in the game around here, and I would encourage you to sort of experiment in this, is through giving, through generosity. So I just want to encourage you to do that. Experiment with that at some level and give to the mission. It's one of the best ways to sort of play in the game and be a part of the team. And to do that, I would recommend going to crossroads.net/give. You can do one-time giving there, or what I do is I now have it set up so that every week something gets taken out of my bank account, so I both don't have to worry about it and I can plan around it. And that, to be someone who plans generosity, is just, I can't even tell you the amount of freedom that comes from that. And the really cool thing is we get to hear stories of people whose lives have been completely changed because they've gotten to hear about Jesus in a language they can understand, because the generosity of everyday people. It's people like Patrick whose life would have been totally different had Crossroads not been around, and people like you and I given.
Growing up for me, raised in a Catholic household. In church, I thought there was a man named Jesus Christ. I believed in a God, kind of. And then something happened and that all changed. 1974 was the last time I went to church. And when I left, I was an atheist. The darkest moment in my life is when I lost my best friend of 37 years due to suicide and depression. And for weeks I cried every single day because I lost him. And I was ready to join him. I was ready to commit suicide myself. I grabbed my gun. I sat down and I remember thinking, if I do this, my kids are gonna hate me. My dog, Neo, who never comes down in the basement, came downstairs and he gave me a look on the face and made a little yelp sound. And he turned his head to the side and I heard, literally I heard, don't, wait, there's more. I didn't know what to think at that point. So I put the gun down and I went on through life thinking this is it. This is it. 2012, that's when that happened. 2015, I get a letter in the mail from a woman saying that she was adopted and the birth mother said that I'm her father. The minute I saw her, I knew she was mine. So we got to know each other and I had asked her, I said, hey, you know, what are you into? You know, thinking bowling, tennis. She said, I go to church. I said, okay, we'll go to church. It was during the Daddy Issues segment. Get that, I meet this daughter. I go to church for the first time. Daddy Issues, right? And I cried. Oh my God, I cried. And I came back the next weekend. And I haven't stopped. And then I saw a video for the God Experiment. And I was told that it was for people who had little to no faith. They gave us a yellow sticky note and they want us to write down why we were there. And I wrote, you know, who is God? What is God? At the end of the class, they gave us that sticky note back. I immediately grabbed my pen and I wrote, who is God? He is Jesus Christ. And what is God? He's a good, good father. I have a relationship with God, and I love it. Absolutely love it. That's it.
That's good.
I did it without crying.
The incredible thing to me about Patrick's story is that Patrick isn't the only one. God is literally impacting the lives of hundreds and hundreds of people all around Crossroads. People have leaned in and said to God that I want more of you. And if that's you, I have two opportunities for you. We'd love to pray for you. So if there's something going on in your life you want prayer for, I want you to text that to us. And so that same number, 513-402-0289, send us something that we can pray for you for. We'd love to do that. And if you're sort of in and around Cincinnati at some of our sites in the city, we have a night of prayer. So you can go to crossroads.net/night of prayer and learn more about that. It's happening this Monday. We're gonna kick off our sort of spark talks because we want something to be sparked in each of us. And so every weekend we're gonna hear from two people whose talks and ideas might be totally different from each other. But our hope is that there's something in each of them that sparks something in you that draws you closer to God. Our first one is Katie. who's figured out how to forgive people, even the very people who wanted her dead.
May 4th, 2011. That is a day I will never forget. When the calendar rolls around to May 4th again, I'm forced to face my own mortality. Because for 5 minutes of May 4th, 2011, I thought my death was one mortar round away. Now, I wanted to show you that video because I was on the receiving end of those very mortar attacks you just saw. That is actual footage of the men who attacked us. A few miles away, me and hundreds of soldiers were hunkered down in our bunkers as 70 mortars walked their way across an airfield that was hundreds of meters away from where I was. Now, I want to back up and I want to address the question that I think 90% of you are asking right now, and that is, wait, she was in the military? And I get it, I don't exactly look like the poster child for Army Strong. And yes, when I'm wearing all my gear, it weighs nearly as much as me. So let me explain. I have two older brothers who I have idolized since I was born. Please don't tell them. And they both joined the Army Reserves, and I was so inspired. So couple that with being bored with the story of my life by my senior year of high school, throw in some patriotism, and when the Army recruiter called me my senior year and asked if I was interested in joining the United States Army, I said, yeah, actually I am. A month later, I enlisted, and the following July of 2007, I went to boot camp. My unit got orders to deploy in 2010, and we were boots on ground in Camp Taji in January 2011. Which brings me back to May 4th. I still remember it so vividly. I woke up to booms, but I felt them in my chest before I actually heard them in my ears. That's how close they were. Me and my roommate made a snap decision to run to the bunker to take cover instead of staying where we were. And we were joined by dozens of other soldiers doing the same thing. I remember getting down, covering my ears, and all I could muster out was, please God, please God, please God. It wasn't even a full sentence, but I think he got the gist. When the dust had settled and everything was clear, we all got up and looked around and just kind of took it all in, kind of giddy and excited, but then we looked to the airfield and saw the smoke rising. And we just thought, what just happened? And how are our friends who were on the airfield because they were still on night duty? Later, we would find out that nobody died that day, and casualties were minor, all things considered. But the psychological effects are still felt by many today. So by the end of that duty day, we all sat around outside, not ready to go to bed yet, because we weren't really sure what was going to happen in the morning. And we just talked. We were mad. We were fearful. We were frustrated. We kept muttering things like, those bastards, how could they? Suddenly, we felt very justified being where we were. Whether that was right or wrong, I don't know. But from that point on, something had changed in my units. People were different. A lot of people couldn't sleep anymore. People came home with a diagnosis with PTSD when they didn't have it before. For me, I came to a breaking point. I decided I was either going to have a nervous breakdown or I could just give over the control. And so I told God, by life or death, I trust you. Whatever happens, I trust you. And there was a peace that came over me that I can't explain. And even today, I've never felt the effects of PTSD. But when we got home, God wanted to uncover some things that I hadn't exactly left in the desert. Unforgiveness. And he revealed these things to me in a process. It wasn't one moment of clarity. It was a process that largely came out through community. My husband and I joined community groups here at Crossroads, and I was able to process out loud my thoughts and my feelings and everything that had happened when I was in the desert. So I want to talk about a few of the things that I started to believe on a deeper level that completely changed the way that I looked at my enemies. First, I learned and believed on a deeper level that every man, woman, and child is created in the image of God. That means we all have characteristics like God. So like mission, duty, and honor. If these are things that inspired me to join the military, then maybe those were the same things that inspired those men to want to attack us. And while that doesn't make it right, maybe it would help me. It helped me see some similarities instead of just differences. The second thing that God wanted to teach me was who was actually my enemy. If those men weren't the enemy, then who was? Ephesians 6:12 says, "We do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against the principalities, the powers, against the rulers of darkness of this age." I felt God asking me to separate every man from their sin, that sin and the one who causes sin is to blame. If God doesn't identify me by my sin, and I'm not supposed to identify myself by my sin, then I have no business identifying anyone else by their sin. And lastly, I felt like God was just simply asking me, love your enemies, pray for them. Not quite that simple, but straight from the mouth of Jesus in Matthew 5:44, he says, "I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you." So where have I found freedom in all that? It's freedom from hate and from anger and from frustration and fear. And if we're being really honest here, freedom from racism that I didn't even know existed inside of me. And what do I do with that today? Who are my enemies now? Well, sometimes my kids feel like my enemy. And everyone who has kids kind of knows what I'm talking about. But is there anything that your kids could do that you couldn't forgive them for? I think the news and social media want to tell us who our enemies are. So when atrocities like Sandy Hook or Paris or Brussels or Orlando happen, I am grieved. I'm so grieved for the victims and their families, but I'm also grieved for the people who commit the crime. So with the remainder of my time, I want to pray for my enemies. I want to pray and forgive the men who attacked my base at Camp Taji, and I want to pray for the family of the man who opened fire in an Orlando club last week. Father, I am coming before you now, just bearing my heart to you. I want to declare forgiveness for the men who opened fire on my base in 2011. I forgive them. And I pray for them. And I pray that you would bless them, that you would bless them with your face, that they would see visions of you at night, so that when they wake up, they seek your face during the day, that they would be catalysts for change in their community, in their culture, that they would end generations of unrest, of pain, of frustration, of death, and that instead your kingdom would be spread instead of the kingdom of darkness. Father, I want to pray for the victims and for the families of the victims from the Orlando shooting. I can only imagine being my parent myself. God, I just ask that you would draw close to them, that you would cover them with peace as they grieve. I pray that they would find forgiveness in their hearts for the family of the man who opened fire. Lastly, Lord, I just want to pray for the woman Noor Salam, who is the wife of Omar Mateen, the man who opened fire in the club. God, I pray that you would take this opportunity to come to her, to reveal yourself to her, that she would turn towards you during this time. Father, I pray for their son. I pray that he would take on the identity of your son instead of the identity of his father. God, I just ask that generations of anger would come to rest now. I bless them. I pray for grace and protection upon them. I ask all these things in your name, Jesus. Amen. Thank you for letting me share my story.
Well, it's Father's Day, so I want to talk about being a dad. And I know right away that this is a very painful topic for a lot of us. A lot of us have had absent father figures. We've had an awful father figure. A lot of us are heroic single mothers. and you were just doing it all as a single mom, and it's a sore reminder that something is broken in our world, that there's not a man by your side that's helping you raise your kids. And yet, there's something powerful about a dad that we can't deny that I want to speak into today. Why is it that God in the Bible is always referred to as a father? Now, God has stereotypical masculine qualities. He absolutely has stereotypical feminine qualities. But why is he referred to as God the Father, not God the Mother? I don't know, really. But one theory is that there's just a power that comes from a dad. And we all know this. We know this. We know that our moms, they may tick us off, but they can't jack us up like our dad can. I mean, we get upset and flip off the thing, but then, like, we go off the rails because of absent or unhealthy fathers. The book of Ephesians chapter 6, 2-4, it says this. Honor your father and mother. Fathers and mothers are equally valued before God. This is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Calls out dads. Dads can provoke anger and hostility and bitterness to a more extreme degree than mothers can, and especially when they're absent. So today we might get excited about being a dad, we might get excited about thanking our dad, or we might get excited about at least valuing the role of having some father figure in my life or in our family. There's all kinds of really bad ideas that are in our culture around fatherhood. One is that fathers aren't necessary. You just see that from the media and the way the fathers are portrayed. And they are. They absolutely are. You do the Google yourself. Just Google the effects of fatherless homes. Just Google the advantage of having a dad, and you'll see economic indicators, emotional indicators, health indicators are all up in the right when there's a strong, healthy male in a person's life. And this doesn't even have to be a DNA dad. This can be simply a father figure. Very, very clear. Another misnomer in our society is your age makes you a man. It doesn't. Being 18 or being 21 doesn't make you a man. You can be a 15-year-old man, and you can be a 35-year-old boy. Has nothing to do with how old you are. Another misnomer in our society is if you do certain masculine things, then you can be a man. If you get a tattoo, if you drink, if you bag a bunch of women, if you have a bunch of money stored up in the bank or a lot of digits in your bank account, if you have got accolades on your wall, then you're a man. No, and you can have all and any of those things and not be a man. There's five things that a man has, five marks of a man. And these marks are the same marks that I'm going to call out in dads today. Number one, vision. Vision. A dad is about vision. We in our country, we are in a perpetual state of adolescence. We exalt adolescence. It's our currency in pop music. It's the way we sell beer. It's the way we have our jokes. We're all adolescent all the time. And I like adolescence. I like junior high humor as much as the next guy. Anybody who's been around here, you know that's the case. But it's different liking junior high humor than actually being a junior high kid for your whole life. We actually authenticate this behavior, and we actually give young males permission to act like idiots. We call it adolescence. You realize that this just is a new phenomenon in the last 100 years or so. No ancient society anywhere in the world ever thought that if you were an adolescent, you could be an idiot. Psychology Today says this, in centuries past, a sexually mature person was never treated as a growing child. Today, sexually mature folk spend perhaps 6 years, ages 12 to 18, living under the authority of their parents. In other words, if you could ejaculate, you were a man. If you had eggs or you had your period, you were a woman. But now we're like, oh, you have this difficult time, and we'll just let you be immature and be an idiot. In the process, we're training up a generation specifically of men to not be men and to not value dads. Why? Because they don't have a vision. You, by the way, you may not have DNA kids right now. You may never have DNA kids, but you can have the value of a father in your life. You can be a dad. In the book of 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 11, it says this, or you know how, like a father with his children, we exhorted each one of you and encouraged you and charged you to walk in a manner worthy of God who calls you into his own kingdom of God. You can be a father figure anytime you exhort, You encourage, you call somebody out on the carpet, you call somebody to a higher standard. That's high. That's how father figures operate. But do you have a vision for that? Do we have a vision for that? Tell you what, we keep getting married later and later and later in our society. I mean, it was normal in all of world history to be married when you were 13. Why? Because you wanted to have sex and you wanted to, like, get going on with your life. Now we just put it off further and further and further in the future. And why do we put it off further and further in the future? Because boys don't have vision. That's why. Boys never have a boy doesn't have a vision. A man has a vision. A boy just wants to live every day and be happy. Happiness is not the same as meaningfulness. The Atlantic put this out really well just recently. It said this. This is why some researchers are cautioning against the pursuit of mere happiness. In a new study over a month-long period, the researchers found that a meaningful life and happy life overlap in certain ways, but are ultimately very different. Leading a happy life, the psychologists found, is associated with being a taker, while leading a meaningful life corresponds with being a giver. We have young males in our culture who are just takers and takers and takers from other women. When you're a dad, you don't take from women, you're a giver. You give to women, you give society, and you have a vision that allows for that. Now, this mark is the same mark as a man has. And by the way, I have a vision for my life. And one of the visions I have for my life, and I think God's put on me, is to speak into men. And that's why I'm happy to tell you that right now I have a brand new book that's come out on Amazon called The Five Marks of a Man. This book is an amalgamation of all the stuff that I've talked about in different series here. And it is absolutely free. Get it today to Wednesday. It's free, 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 free. I want you to get it. I want you to share with everyone you can. We would have had it free forever on Amazon, but Amazon would only let us have it on free for 5 days. Then it's got to go up to $4.99, which is a pretty modest price. Although it's not a very long book. Why is it not a long book? Because guys don't like reading books. Yeah. Most of us, and this guy doesn't like writing books. By the way, I don't get any money from any of my books, partially because no one ever buys them. I don't get any money from any of my books because all money goes to Crossroads. I don't mean it comes to me and then do Crossroads. I mean it all goes directly to Crossroads. It never comes through any of my accounts. This one we're self-publishing. We're pretty excited about it. And I just tell you, it's a vision. It's a vision that our country needs of getting people to become men and enjoy the faithfulness and amazingness of men. Second mark of a dad is work. Work. Being a dad is a lot of work. It's a lot of work. That's why males put it off as long as possible. We put it off as long as possible. But here's the thing. If you don't have a vision, you will never do work. The reason you work is because you have a vision. Boys don't have vision, so therefore boys don't work. And I want to encourage you and just say, men, being a dad is an amazing vision. It's an amazing vision. Why? Because it's the one thing you will do that will outlast you. Your job will be gone when you're gone. Your fitness will be gone when you're gone. Your brain power will be gone when you're gone unless you've developed another generation that's come up after you. It's the only thing I've ever done in my life that's going to outlast me. Crossroads may come and go, but I tell you what, my kids will go on and they are doing things that I've prepared for them and I've dug into them that no one else has. And I tell you what, it is work. It is difficult. And I thought it'd be over when they were 18. I did. Stupid me. I just thought, well, you know, you get to an age and you just kind of less work. And it's different work. It's just not true. This came to focus with me last Easter. Not this Easter, but last Easter. We've had this family tradition. And one of the things that I do in the home, my role is I have this habit of writing clues on Easter that causes our kids to go out on Easter and find baskets. So I basically take the Easter story and I meld it with some poetry and I have the kids kind of go all over the house in search of clues that would tell them where their Easter basket is. Like, here's a classic one. Here's one. I keep these on my computer and I adjust them every year. Here's this one. It says, Pilate wasn't a pilot, but a man who wielded power. Prophecies were told of the Nazarene as clues. Being beaten and sent to the cross, he didn't cower. Your next stop is where Jake poos. That's good stuff right there, I tell you what. So they go in the bathroom, and there's the next clue, and they go the next one. So I would like run them upstairs, run them downstairs, run them all over the place. And so this last year, came in, and they said, okay, where's our clues? And our kids were at that point 24, 22, and 17. I said, well, you know, your mom and I were talking. I mean, with the Easter basket thing and the clues. I don't, you know, we just figured that wasn't all that relevant for you guys anymore. I never forget my oldest daughter. She went, well, that sucks. So this last year we brought it back, except this time, okay, you want some clues? I ran their rear ends all over Cincinnati. It wasn't, no, you're not going to stay here. They're going up to All Park, going down all over the place. It was great. And I'll tell you, dads still want to work. And our kids need us to work for them. In fact, you know, you have a dad, you want a dad. In fact, if you know, if you don't have a dad, this is a difficult time for you right now, this message. But you know, you never want your dad to stop working for you. I tell you what, your dad works for you every time he encourages you. My kids want me to work for them when I plan some sort of outing. My kids want me to work for them when I give them advice. They want me to work for them when I take them out to dinner and I pay for them. That's all forms of work, and it never goes out of habit for us. James Terry White says this, it's not necessary for a man to be actively bad in order to make a failure in life. Simple inaction will accomplish it. Nature has everywhere written her protest against idleness. Everything which ceases to struggle, which remains inactive, rapidly deteriorates. It is a struggle toward an ideal, the constant effort to get higher and further, which develops manhood and character. Third mark of a dad is a minority position. You will be in the minority. You will teach your kids that the rest of culture says isn't true. You will tell your kids not to do stuff that the rest of culture says to do. You will tell your kids to do stuff the rest of culture says is ridiculous. In fact, you'll even be a minority in the house. Like, I was the one fighting when one of my daughters would walk out of the house with something way, way too tight. Be like, ho. Like, I was like the only one. My wife was okay with it. I'm like, no, she's not going out. Like, I used to call it bum huggers. She's not going out in bum huggers. Not working. You will take a minority, you will be in the minority. In fact, if you value marriage and you value being a dad, you'll be in the minority. I was thinking of this just when I watched this video on a plane called How to Be Single. It's pretty interesting. So is this scene. Now, that's the attitude of our culture. I'll just take the minority position and say, it's not true. It's not true. The end of spontaneous sex. I just had spontaneous, unprotected sex with my wife on the Ohio River just the other day. I'm telling you what, it was awesome. Yes, awesome. It's great. Who gets these lies that like marriage is not amazing? It's amazing. It's awesome. The sex is amazing in marriage. It's better 28 years in or whatever it is than it was the first year. It's a no-brainer. I'm telling you what. I know I'm in a minority when I talk about it this way because us boys, we want to put it off as long as possible. Put it off out there and then put kids off as long as possible because I want to have my freedom right now and I want to do that. Hey, you can have your freedom right now and you can have your meaningful life right now. You can have whatever you want to do on your own time right now or you can also have another form of freedom later on. I'll tell you what, this is minority position stuff. We don't get this. My good friend Rourke Denver, who's a Navy SEAL commander or was, he's in the movie Act of Valor, been an author of some books. He talks about going to his daughter's, he told me this was included in the book, he went to his daughter's ballerina recital. Two daughters he has. And this guy who was there, no guys go to ballerina recitals. They always like opt out, let the woman go. I don't want to go. Well, Rourke was there. And so was this other guy who apparently was there only because his wife told him he had to go. So he's there and he sees Rourke, another guy. He figures, oh, you're like me. You don't want to be here. And he says, hey, well, gosh, we should be out shooting guns or something like that. And he kept egging him on. He said, you know what, dude, seriously, let's like leave here and like do some shots because like I'm really hurting here right now. And finally, Rourke just looked at him and said, Hey, man, I don't know you, but let me tell you something about me. I love my daughters. I love my daughters, and I love that they're a ballerina, and I wouldn't be anywhere else other than right here, so I just appreciate you not talking to me that way anymore. Awesome. That's a minority position. Men love ballerinas. Dads love to be present when that takes place. Number four, protector. Protector. A dad is a protector. I have a good friend who was a protector to his son who fell into a riptide while they were out in a boat. And Jimmy was a former decathlete with Mexico. And he exerted himself for so long that his His adrenal glands were full on open, just fighting and fighting and fighting, finally got his kid in. And because his adrenal glands were open for that entire time, he had permanent liver damage just from swimming and fighting a riptide. I was reminded of that when I read yesterday about a dad in New Jersey who had his son and two of his friends that were out playing in New Jersey, and they got caught up in a riptide. And this guy, Clark, James Clark, went out and fought the riptide, saved their lives, and he got back to shore, and he took two steps, and he fell dead of a heart attack. That's a dream death for every dad. There's not a dad in here that wouldn't want to die that way. Fortunately or unfortunately, none of us are probably going to die that way, but we have the ability to protect. How do we protect? One of the ways that we protect is we protect against all the other boys in our culture who are raping our women. It's unbelievable. It is unbelievable what's taking place in our culture. It is crazy. Because we've devalued women so much, and we've devalued manhood, and we've allowed people to be adolescents up to when they're 30, we have women who are suffering the consequences and suffering the carnage. We know the story of the woman at Stanford who was raped, and you might not know that she was raped and stopped where it was only because it was two graduate students who were coming by on bicycles and saw this happening and pulled the guy off of her. She says in her official court statement this. She says, "I sleep with two bicycles that I drew taped above my head to remind myself there are heroes in this story, that we are looking out for one another. To have felt their protection and love is something I will never forget." We protect. Dads, that's what we do. We protect. My daughter is heading off to college next year, my youngest daughter. My last one who will be leaving the nest will be going off to college. And I just have to tell her, honey, you have a high likelihood of getting raped next year. The statistics are very clear, and I know personally firsthand a lot of people who that's happened to. Now, I could just ignore that and, you know, say, no, I'm going to... So how do I protect? Well, I got to give her coaching right now. We talk about it. She's always like, "Dad." I'm like, "Honey, got to talk about this." So a couple things you got to deal with. First of all, honey, you need never walk anywhere at night alone. Probably not during the day anymore either. Seriously, you need to always be with somebody else. Secondly, if you're going to drink in college, which you likely are, I'm not saying you're not, but you need to be smart about it. You need to never get drunk at a party where there's other people of the other sex. I'm telling you, you can't do it. You can't lower your defenses. And you can't ever have somebody give you an open drink at a party. If someone brings you a mixed drink and you haven't seen it come out of the bottle and you haven't seen it mix yourself, you cannot have it. Someone gives you a glass of wine, you haven't seen it come out of the bottle, you can't have it. Someone brings you a beer and it's opened, you can't do it. Now, if someone gives you a closed beer and you crack the top, fine. Well, honey, unfortunately, I got to tell you these things. These are critical, and these are the kind of conversations dads have and father figures have with people that they're parenting as well, by the way. My son, I'm really proud of him. He got done with college in 4 years, where it took me 7. And I wasn't a doctor, by the way, either. But I just wasn't as good. I think he's succeeding me because I'm preparing him as a dad. I'm sort of nurturing him along. I'm just so proud of him. Got done 4 years. And he also got done with very, very minimal college debt. Lib and I were able to figure out finances for a little over 3 years of his education. Then he took on debt for the rest of it. It's a very responsible amount of debt. Very proud of him. But it's also an amount of debt I'm personally uncomfortable with. And I'm so constantly going, "Where are you in your debt? How are you paying it down? What's going on? Yada, 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 yada." And so I've decided to start incentivizing him. So I've got a motorcycle jacket, a really expensive motorcycle jacket. I wanted to get a different one. I knew he wanted it. I said, "Hey, Jake, I will give you this jacket. The thing is, I want to see you pay double the price of this jacket against your student loan. Now, I want to see it go down. And when, as soon as I see that, I will just give you this jacket." And he said to me, he said, why are you so upset about this debt? I mean, his debt is like nothingness compared to other friends that he has. I said, "Son, because I know what it's like to be in debt. You don't. I want to keep it that way. I know what it's like to be so in bondage to it. And why am I thinking this way and talking this way? It's because I want to protect him. I want to protect him from things that he doesn't understand. That's what a dad does." 5, a dad's a team player. Dad's a team player. We know Mary, Mother Mary, Jesus' mother. You know, we know she was an amazing woman. Some people go a bit overboard and deify her and actually pray to her. I don't think Mary enjoys that at all. I don't change that at all. But you know what I do know? I do know that Mary, I do believe personally that Mary was the greatest person who walked planet Earth up to that time, maybe ever. Why do I believe that? I believe that because if I was God and I was going to put my seed in a woman, I would pick the most amazing woman that was alive. Amazing. So we appropriately talk about Mary and understand her pretty well in Christian circles. But we don't talk all that much about Joseph. This guy was a stud. God at the same time knew that he needed some stepdad who was going to be in the family that was going to develop his son. And he chose Joseph. And Joseph finds out that Mary is pregnant and she says, "It's God's." Matthew 1:19 says this, "And her husband Joseph, being a just man and unwilling to put her to shame, resolved to divorce her quietly." He's a just man and doesn't want to put shame on her. And then, of course, God miraculously talks to him and he gets it. But this is how he sees. See, Joseph is a team player. I'll tell you, the best team you can ever be a part of is a marriage. I'm telling you right now, I'll talk to young males, the best thing you can do for your life is to get married as soon as you can. Now, I know I'm a man, I'm already positioned. I'm not telling you marry the wrong person. I'm telling you this ridiculousness that you ought to wait to be in a great team until as late as life as possible is ridiculous. Every person I know is a man who's had a massive impact, has gotten married as quickly as they could, the right person came, and they had a family, and their exponential power just, poof, it just took off. The best team you can ever be a part of is a marriage. And the best thing you can do to further your life, to further vision, to make sure your life matters is to have a kid. Have kids. It is crazy. And I am grieved that our culture just puts boyhood on us and wants to squash all of us into boyhood and keep us as little immature ninnies that never grow up and use our pair appropriately. It is awful. I'm telling you, it's the minority position, but I tell you what, if you want to have vision, if you want to work at something, this is what greatness is, and this is also why our culture is so wacky. It's hurting, and we see cues in nature all over the world. One similar cue is many of us have been to South Africa. We've had, 2,000-3,000 people from Crossroads go to mission trips in South Africa, and many of us have gone to Kruger National Park. We go to see all these crazy great animals running wild. Well, they had a lot of elephants in Kruger, and conversely, in Polanisburg, another national park in South Africa, they didn't have enough elephants. So the National Ranger Service had the idea of, let's just transport some elephants from over here to over here. So they rigged up these harnesses, and they put these harnesses under these elephants, and as they started them off the ground, the harnesses kept breaking. Now, fortunately, it wasn't like 30 feet up in the air they were breaking, but just when they started, like, it would snap. So they said, "Well, let's get the smaller elephants." So they took some of the smaller elephants, and they lifted them up out of Kruger, took them over to Polanisburg, took them over, and they kind of evened out the populations, and gosh, everything looked good. But then in Polanisburg, they noticed that the rhinoceroses were getting gored and killed, and they couldn't understand why it was. They saw puncture marks in them. They didn't understand this. The rhinos normally don't do this to one another. So they set up some hidden cameras that were motion sensitive, and they found that it was the elephants that were goring and trampling the rhinos for no apparent reason. So they thought about this for a bit, and they said, "Well, what's going on here?" And so someone had the theory of, well, we took all the smaller ones over. Maybe it's these small males that are basically getting drunk and smashing mailboxes. And they're getting out of control. So they made bigger harnesses, and they brought over some of the bigger ones and dropped them in, and bam, problem solved. See, even creation tells us there's nothing like a father figure. There's nothing like a father figure to get things. And I tell you what, dads, father figures in here, it's time for you to start getting things right. It's time for you to stop being sensitive to how people are telling you to keep being a boy. Time for you to man up and be the dad that God has called you to be and everybody around you wants to be. Our country needs you badly. I'll give you one last push. So this book goes available, and I want you to get it for free. When it's worth the money whenever it comes to be paid for, by the way. Print copies will come out in 3 weeks. I want you to give it to every person you know. This is an epidemic in our culture. I believe God's given me a vision to speak into. And everyone needs to have it. In fact, if you're a woman in here and you're dating somebody, you need to read this book like now. This is great discussion with whoever you're dating. And if they don't want to have that discussion because they're not lining up these marks, head for the hills. Take off. I'm telling you right now. These things are primal. They're where we are. And I want the best for you. I want the best for you as a dad. And I want the best for you as a mom. And I want the best for you as a son and a daughter of the ultimate Heavenly Father, God Himself. So God, I thank You that You have worked in this place and You are working in this place. God, connect father figures with children, whether they be 6, 16, or 26. Connect fathers with their DNA kids coming out of here. And God, I thank You for being a good dad. Amen. All right, hey, as we leave and take off, we're gonna do a song as you walk out. And also, hey, summertime, oftentimes we're out of town. That's okay, but hey, remember this. We have Crossroads Anywhere now, crossroads.net. You can always be a part of the streaming. We'd love to connect with you anyway this summer. Have an amazing day.